with mirth. I admire your stubbornness. It's so much like mine. He got to his feet then and held a hand out for Jace to take. Come, walk around the deck with me. There's something I want to show you. Jace wanted to spurn the offered hand, but wasn't sure, considering the pain in his head, that he could make it to his feet unaided. Besides, it was probably better not to anger his father so soon. Whatever Valentine might say about prizing Jace's rebelliousness, he had never had much patience with disobedient behavior. Valentine's hand was cool and dry, his grip oddly reassuring. When Jace was on his feet, Valentine released his hold and drew a stelly out of his pocket. "Let me take those injuries away," he said, reaching out for his son. Jace drew away, after a second's hesitation that Valentine would surely have noticed. "I don't want your help." Valentine put the stele away.
"As you like."
He began to walk, and Jace, after a moment, followed him, jogging to catch up. He knew his father well enough to know he would never turn around to see if Jace had pursued him, but would just expect that he had and begin talking accordingly. He was right. By the time Jace reached his father's side, Valentine had already started speaking. He had his hands loosely clasped behind his back and moved with an easy, careless grace, unusual in a big, broad-shouldered man. He leaned forward as he walked, almost as if he were striding into a heavy wind.
"If I recall correctly," Valentine was saying, "you are in fact familiar with Milton's Paradise Lost."
"You only made me read it 10 or 15 times, said Jace. "It's better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, etc., and so on."
"Non servium," said Valentine. "I will not serve." It's what Lucifer had inscribed upon his banner when he rode with his host of rebel angels against a corrupt authority.
"What's your point, that you're on the devil's side?"
"Some say Milton was on the devil's side himself. His Satan is certainly a more interesting figure than his god."
They had nearly reached the front of the ship. He stopped and leaned against the guardrail. Jace joined him there. They had passed the bridges of the East River and were heading out into the open water between Staten Island and Manhattan. The lights of the downtown financial district shimmered like witchlight on the water. The sky was powdered with diamond dust, and the river hid its secrets under a slick black sheet, broken here and there with a silvery flash that could have been a fish's tail or a mermaid's.
"My city," Jace thought, experimentally. But the words still brought to mind Alicante and its crystal towers, not the skyscrapers of Manhattan.
After a moment, Valentine said,
"Why are you here, Jonathan? I wondered after I saw you in the Bone City if your hatred for me was implacable. I had nearly given up on you."
His tone was level, as it almost always was, but there was something in it, not vulnerability, but at least a sort of genuine curiosity, as if he had realized that Jace was capable of surprising him. Jace looked out at the water.
"The Queen of the Seely Court wanted me to ask you a question," he said. "She told me to ask you what blood runs in my veins."
Surprise passed over Valentine's face like a hand smoothing away all expression.
"You spoke with the Queen?"
Jace said nothing.
"It is the way of the folk. Everything they say has more than one meaning. Tell her, if she asks again, that the blood of the angel runs in your veins."
"And in every shadow hunter's veins," said Jace, disappointed.
He'd hoped for a better answer.
"You wouldn't lie to the Queen of the Seely Court, would you?"
Valentine's tone was short.
"No. And you wouldn't come here just to ask me that ridiculous question. Why are you really here, Jonathan?"
"I had to talk to someone." He wasn't as good at controlling his voice as his father was. He could hear the pain in it, like a bleeding wound just under the surface. "The Lightwoods. I'm nothing but trouble for them. Luke must hate me by now. The Inquisitor wants me dead. I did something to hurt Alec, and I'm not even sure what."
"And your sister?" Valentine said. "What about Clarissa?"
"Why do you have to ruin everything?" Clary had said.
"She's not too pleased with me either." He hesitated.
"I remembered what you said at the Bone City, that you never got a chance to tell me the truth. I don't trust you," he added. "I want you to know that. But I thought I'd give you the chance to tell me why."
"You have to ask me more than why, Jonathan."
There was a note in his father's voice that startled Jace, a fierce humility that seemed to temper Valentine's pride, as steel might be tempered by fire. There are so many whys. Why did you kill the Silent Brothers? Why did you take the mortal sword? What are you planning? Why wasn't the mortal cup enough for you? Jace caught himself before he could ask any more questions. Why did you leave me a second time? Why did you tell me I wasn't your son anymore, then come back for me anyway?
You know what I want. The Clave is hopelessly corrupt and must be destroyed and built again. Idris must be freed from the influence of the degenerate races, and Earth made proof against the demonic threat.
Yeah, about that demonic threat. Jace glanced around as if he half expected to see the black shadow of Agrimmon hulking toward him. I thought you hated demons. Now you use them like servants. The Ravener, the Drevac demons, Agrimmon, they're your employees. Guards, butler, personal chef, for all I know.
Valentine tapped his fingers on the railing.
I'm no friend to demons, he said. I am Nephilim, no matter how much I might think the Covenant is useless and the law fraudulent. A man doesn't have to agree with his government to be a patriot, does he? It takes a true patriot to dissent, to say he loves his country more than he cares for his own place in the social order. I've been vilified for my choice, forced into hiding, banished from Idris. But I am, I will always be, Nephilim. I can't change the blood in my veins if I wish to, and I don't.
I do, Jace thought of Clary. He glanced down at the dark water again, knowing it wasn't true. To give up the hunt, the kill, the knowledge of one's own soaring speed and sure abilities, it wasn't possible. He was a warrior. He could be nothing else.
Do you? Valentine asked.
Jace looked away quickly, wondering if his father could read his face. It had been just the two of them alone for so many years. He'd known his father's face better than his own once. Valentine was the one person from whom he felt he could never hide what he was feeling, or the first person at least. Sometimes he felt as if Clary could look right through him as if he were glass.
No, he said. I don't. You're a shadow hunter forever?
I am, Jace said. In the end, what you made me.
Good, said Valentine. That's what I wanted to hear.
He leaned back against the railing, looking up at the night sky. There was gray in his silvery white hair. Jace had never noticed it before.
This is a war, Valentine said. The only question is, what side will you fight on?
I thought we were all on the same side. I thought it was us against the demon worlds.
If only it could be. Don't you understand that if I felt that the Clave had the best interests of this world at heart, if I thought they were doing the best job they possibly could, by the Angel, why would I fight them? What reason would I have?
Power, Jace thought, but he said nothing. He was no longer sure what to say, much less what to believe.
If the Clave goes on as they are, Valentine said, the demons will see their weakness and attack. And the Clave, distracted by their endless courting of the degenerate races, will be in no condition to fight them off. The demons will attack, and they will destroy, and there will be nothing left.
The degenerate races. The words carried an uncomfortable familiarity. They recalled Jace's childhood to him in a way that was not entirely unpleasant. When he thought of his father and of Idris, it was always the same blurred memory of hot sunshine burning down on the green lawns in front of their country house, and of a big, dark, broad-shouldered figure leaning down to lift him off the grass and carry him inside. He must have been very young then, and he had never forgotten it, not the way the grass had smelled, green and bright and newly cut, or the way the sun had turned his father's hair to a white halo, nor the feeling of being carried, of being safe.
Luke, Jay said with some difficulty. Luke isn't a degenerate. Lucian is different. He was a shadow hunter once.
Valentine's tone was flat and final.
This isn't about specific downworlders, Jonathan. This is about the survival of every living creature in this world. The Angel chose the Nephilim for a reason. We are the best of this world, and we are meant to save it. We are the closest thing that exists in this world to gods,
and we must use that power to save this world from destruction, whatever the cost to us.
Chase leaned his elbows on the railing. It was cold here. The icy wind cut through his clothes, and the tips of his fingers were numb. But in his mind, he saw green hills and blue water and the honey-colored stones of the Wayland Manor House.
"In the old tale," he said, "Satan said to Adam and Eve, 'You shall be as gods,' when he tempted them into sin, and they were cast out of the garden because of it."
There was a pause before Valentine laughed. He said,
"See, that's what I need you for, Jonathan. You keep me from the sin of pride."
"There are all sorts of sins."
Jace straightened up and turned to face his father.
"You didn't answer my question about the demons, Father. How can you justify summoning them, associating with them? Do you plan to send them against the Clave?"
"Of course I do," said Valentine without hesitation,
without a moment's pause to consider whether it might be wise to reveal his plans to someone who might share them with his enemies. Nothing could have shaken Jace more than to realize how sure his father was of success.
"The Clave won't yield to reason, only to force. I tried to build an army of Forsaken. With the Cup, I could create an army of new Shadowhunters, but that will take years. I don't have years. We, the human race, don't have years. With the sword, I can call to me an obedient army of demons. They will serve me as tools, do whatever I demand. They will have no choice. And when I am done with them, I will command them to destroy themselves, and they will do it."
His voice was emotionless. Jace was gripping the railing so hard that his fingers had begun to ache.
"You can't slaughter every Shadowhunter who opposes you. That's murder."
"I won't have to. When the Clave sees the power arrayed against them, they'll surrender. They're not suicidal. And there are those among them who support me."
There was no arrogance in Valentine's voice, only a calm certainty.
"They will step forward when the time comes."
"I think you're underestimating the Clave."
Jace tried to make his voice steady.
"I don't think you understand how much they hate you."
"Hate is nothing when weighed against survival."
Valentine's hand went to his belt, where the hilt of the sword gleamed dully.
"But don't take my word for it. I told you there was something I wanted to show you. Here it is."
He drew the sword from its sheath and held it out to Jace. Jace had seen Malartek before in the Bone City, hanging on the wall in the Pavilion of the Speaking Stars. And he had seen the hilt of it protruding from Valentine's shoulder sheath, but he'd never really examined it up close. The Angel's Sword. It was a dark, heavy silver, glimmering with a dull sheen. Light seemed to move over and through it, as if it were made of water. In its hilt bloomed a fiery rose of light. Jace spoke through his dry mouth.
"Very nice.
I want you to hold it."
Valentine presented the sword to his son, the way he'd always taught him, hilt first. The sword seemed to shimmer blackly in the starlight. Jace hesitated.
"I don't..." "Take it."
Valentine pressed it into his hand. The moment Jace's fingers closed around the grip, a spear of light shot up the hilt of the sword and down the core of it into the blade. He looked quickly to his father, but Valentine was expressionless. A dark pain spread up Jace's arm and through his chest. It wasn't that the sword was heavy, it wasn't. It was that it seemed to want to pull him downward, to drag him through the ship, through the green ocean water, through the fragile crust of the earth itself. Jace felt as if the breath were being torn out of his lungs. He flung his head up and looked around, and saw that the night had changed. A glimmering net of thin gold wires had been flung across the sky, and the stars shone down through it, bright as nail heads hammered into the darkness. Jace saw the curve of the world as it slipped away from him, and for a moment was struck by the beauty of it all. Then the night sky seemed to crack open like a glass, and pouring through the shards came a horde of dark shapes, humped and twisted, gnarled and faceless, howling out a soundless scream that seared the inside of his mind. Icy wind burned him as six-legged horses hurtled past, their hooves striking bloody sparks from the deck of the ship. The things that rode them were indescribable. Overhead, eyeless, leathery-winged creatures circled, screeching and dripping a venomous green slime. Jace bent over the railing, retching uncontrollably, the sword still gripped in his hand.
Below him, the water churned with demons like a poisonous stew. He saw spiny creatures with bloody saucer-like eyes struggling as they were dragged under by boiling masses of slippery black tentacles. A mermaid caught in the grip of a 10-legged water spider screamed hopelessly as it sank its fangs into her thrashing tail, its red eyes glittering like beads of blood. The sword fell from Jace's hand and clattered to the deck. Abruptly, the sound and spectacle were gone and the night was silent. He hung tightly to the railing, staring down at the sea below in disbelief. It was empty, its surface ruffled only by wind.
"What was that?" Jace whispered.
His throat felt rough, as if it had been scraped with sandpaper. He looked wildly at his father, who had bent to retrieve the soul sword from the deck where Jace had dropped it.
"Are those the demons you've already called?"
"No."
Valentine slid Malartek into its sheath.
"Those are the demons that have been drawn to the edges of this world by the sword. I brought my ship to this place because the wards are thin here. What you saw is my army, waiting on the other side of the wards, waiting for me to call them to my side."
His eyes were grave.
"Do you still think the Clave won't capitulate?"
Jace closed his eyes and said, "Not all of them. Not the Lightwoods."
"You could convince them. If you stand with me, I swear no harm will come to them."
The darkness behind Jace's eyes began to turn red. He had been imagining the ashes of Valentine's old house, the blackened bones of the grandparents he'd never met. Now he saw other faces. Alex, Isabel's, Max's, Clary's.
"I've done so much to hurt them already," he whispered.
"Nothing else must happen to any of them. Nothing."
"Of course. I understand."
And Jace realized, to his astonishment, that Valentine did understand, that somehow he saw what no one else seemed to be able to understand.
"You think it is your fault, all the harm that has befallen your friends, your family."
"It is my fault."
"You're right. It is."
At that, Jace looked up in absolute astonishment. Surprise at being agreed with battled with horror and relief in equal measures.
"Is it?"
"The harm is not deliberate, of course, but you are like me. We poison and destroy everything we love. There is a reason for that."
"What reason?"
Valentine glanced up at the sky.
"We are meant for a higher purpose, you and I. The distractions of the world are just that, distractions. If we allow ourselves to be turned aside from our course by them, we are duly punished."
"And our punishment is visited on everyone we care about? That seems a little hard on them."
"Fate is never fair. You are caught in a current much stronger than you are, Jonathan. Struggle against it, and you'll drown not just yourself, but those who try to save you. Swim with it, and you'll survive."
"Clary?"
"No harm will come to your sister if you join with me. I will go to the ends of the earth to protect her. I will bring her to Idris, where nothing can happen to her. I promise you that."
"Alec? Isabel? Max?"
"The Lightwood children also will have my protection."
Jace said softly, "Luke?" Valentine hesitated, then said,
"All your friends will be protected. Why can't you believe me, Jonathan? This is the only way that you can save them, I swear it."
Jace couldn't speak. Inside him, the cold of fall battled with the memory of summer.
"Have you made your decision?" Valentine said.
Jace couldn't see him, but he could hear the finality in the question. He even sounded eager. Jace opened his eyes. The starlight was a white burst against his irises. For a moment, he could see nothing else. He said,
"Yes, Father. I've made my decision."
Part 3. Day of Wrath. Chapter 14. Fearless.
When Clary awoke, light was streaming in through the windows, and there was a sharp pain in her left cheek. Rolling over, she saw that she'd fallen asleep on her sketchpad, and the corner of it had been digging into her face. She'd also dropped her pen onto the duvet, and there was a black stain spreading across the cloth. With a groan, she sat up, rubbed her cheek ruefully, and went in search of a shower. The bathroom showed telltale signs of the activities of the night before. There were bloody cloths shoved into the trash, and a smear of dried blood across the sink. With a shudder, Clary ducked into the shower with a bottle of grapefruit body wash, determined to scrub away her lingering feelings of unease.